Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Bootcast with Irish Bootstrapper. I'm your host Eugene Devereaux and this is Series 4, Episode 10 of the show. Before we go any further today, folks, I'd just like to draw your attention to the fact that I'm wearing a hat indoors. It's a freezing day or freezing night here in Carlow, Ireland at the Irish Bootstrapper headquarters. I think the snow is on the way. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm excited and proud to announce that Irish Bootstrapper is finally morphing into the lifestyle brand that I had envisaged well over a year ago on my travels out in Southeast Asia. So we'll be bringing a range of high quality clothing and accessories to you guys in the next couple of weeks. Keep an eye on the website irishbootstrapper.com for the store once it goes live. This is just one of the beanie hats that will be available. Here's another one. This is a runner's hat. It's more kind of a smaller, snugger fit with a sweatband built into it. So ideal for any sporting enthusiasts on the cold nights. This is a nice baby blue one if that's what you're into or after. Yeah, so in order to keep the podcast on the road and to keep the show going out every week, folks, and to make it better and improve it and to get the guests on and the stories on that can really impact you guys who are listening and supporting and watching, there has to be some kind of funding source. So the idea is to launch the lifestyle brand and to keep the podcast going and to hire somebody eventually to do the production and any of the editing or social media work that goes in behind the scenes to keep the show going. Rather than having sponsored ads or, you know, sponsorships or ads on it, I want to keep it free so that I can keep pumping it out and making it better. Excited to be announcing that. I won't talk about it anymore for today. As you know by now, the brand themes are adventure and purpose. And our tagline is Become the Journey. So it's quite obvious if you listen back over the majority of the podcast, one of the major themes is mental health, along with adventure and purpose and travel. That's what Irish Bootstrapper is and will be and is going to be a global phenomenon. So thank you once again for supporting, watching or listening up to now, folks. And reach out to me if you'd like to get a beanie before the store goes live in the next couple of weeks. So we've got a couple of beanies available at the moment before we go live. So if you want to be one of the first in, drop me a DM or a message or an email and let me know. Thanks. Okay, so today's guest, folks, is an American man. He's fluent in Japanese, he's lived and worked all over the world, and has become an expert in living and working abroad. So he's recently just launched his own venture called expatempire.com. Would you please welcome Mr. David McNeil to the podcast. Okay, so hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Bootcast with Irish Bootstrapper. I'm your host Eugene Devereaux and joining me in the hot seat today is Mr. David McNeil. David, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome, you're welcome. David, so kicking it off, where do we begin? Lots of travel stories and tales from around the world and from working abroad and to helping people work abroad. So can we just touch briefly on what it is that you're doing at the moment then with Expat Empire?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm living here in Porto, Portugal right now. And in the last years, I've moved from the United States to, I did 3 months in Beijing. Then I lived 2 years in Tokyo, lived 3 years in Berlin, and now I'm here in Porto. So I've had basically a good background in being able to live abroad, working in different companies, developing my career while also indeed seeing the world and kind of living that dream that I had for a long time. So what I've done in the last months, I actually started this 2.5 years ago, but I just really went full in on it in the last couple months. It's a project called Expat Empire, which is expatempire.com. Basically what I help people do is to figure out ways that they can move abroad if that's something that they're considering or interested in. And that can also be for digital nomads and people trying to remote work or people wanting to live in a certain place for the long period of time. And we create a lot of different content to inspire people to live abroad. We also provide consulting services to show them how they can do it and be more hands-on in terms of supporting them in their journeys.
Brilliant. It's a good pitch. It's easy to understand what it is you do. So you've obviously a good range of travel experiences. Tell me about your first travel in China or moving from the West to the East. Like, what was that like for you as?
Yeah. it's even hard to put into words because, so as far as that particular experience or the experience of going to, as you say, to the East, so I'd had some experiences traveling with family and doing cruises and things like that growing up, but to really go to such a foreign country, really halfway around the world, my first time doing that was visiting Japan when I was in high school, the last year or last summer of high school. And I went for a 1 month trip around to a bunch of different cities, did some studying, homestays, things like that. But I had already started studying Japanese when I was 12 years old. So I had already been interested in Japan, interested in learning the language, working towards, you know, fluency and proficiency in the language for 5 years at that point. But it had just been such a dream in the back of my head for all of that time that to finally get there was just incredible, honestly. I mean, it is hard to put into words because there was so much emotion and so much buildup and expectation, anticipation. And yet despite all of that, I actually found that it was even more exciting and satisfying and energizing to be there the first time. And then I went back 2 years later. And after that, another 1 month trip, then I decided I want to come back to Japan, but only the next time I want it to be when I'm going to be staying as opposed to being a traveling, you know, tourist. So it took many years in the interim to actually make that dream happen. But every time I went to Japan, I was coming back and it's like, let me get back into my studies, just preparing, figuring out how I can make that dream a reality.
Nice. So learning Japanese from age 12, that sounds like a tall order, a big task. Was that something you wanted to do, or was it just kind of an option, or are your parents both American? Or
So definitely no Japanese background for me, but I think it was a number of things that came together. It was my dad saying, hey, you're, you know, in middle school, maybe it's time for you to start digging in on a certain hobby or trying to get good at something, you know, just like focusing as opposed to just doing whatever when you're younger. So it was that, you know, thinking about what the opportunities were in front of me. I tried music for a little bit. I wasn't any good at that. I love going to concerts. I can appreciate music very well. Go to a lot of festivals, even, you know, now in terms of the normal time. It was not into music, practicing it or anything. Not really much into sports either. And so it was just kind of like, oh, maybe language. And of course, I had a couple languages at my school, but none of them really caught my attention. But something about Japanese, with also being interested in the animation, the games, all of that cultural export, it was all of those pieces mixed with, I guess, the extra thing that just took it to that next level was my mom was working for a book selling company at the time. They had a sale going on during the year. So she said to my sister and me, like, just check out this pamphlet, see if there's anything interesting. And they had a Japanese book and cassette tape set. So I was like, please get me that. And then not long after that, I really dug in, got committed, and built a passion for studying Japanese. And then it was really just me going as far with it as I possibly could.
Jeez, nice. That's amazing. And to, like, you know, become proficient in a language at such a young age is such a benefit to anyone. Would you be fluent at the moment then, or?
Yeah, so I got very fluent before I moved to Japan already. And then while I was there, I managed to pass the top level proficiency exam. And I said that was enough for me. So still very good. And I guess, to cut to it, my wife, who I met in Berlin, is Japanese. Yeah. So I speak with her. We speak like half and half, you know, English, Japanese here at home. But I definitely keep it up. But that was the pinnacle of my studies. And it was like one of those big time, long-term goals. Yeah. And finally passing that test was really satisfying, but also recognizing how much time I spent preparing for an exam that has you studying things that aren't even necessarily that useful. You know, it's just more like this archaic Japanese, or like, not stuff that you necessarily use day to day, but it was a good experience. Yeah.
Brilliant. And then just moving to China then, like, I haven't been to China myself, but I hear from others that Japan and China are very different in many ways. Did you find Japan more like America or more like the West, in terms of technology or cleanliness or just the way they do things?
Yeah, so I think both countries are very, very different from the West. I mean, from what you tend to experience in the West. And I think, yeah, in my subsequent moves coming back into, let's say, the West, even though it's in Europe, which is still quite different for me, has been more familiar. So I think both provide something very different from what I was used to. But but that was also what I was looking for, was just something very different. And I do think that what I tend to say about Japan is that, for example, it's maybe the furthest you can get from Western culture that's also still very, very safe, you know, first world type, if you want to use that terminology, kind of, very industrialized experience. And China is, I mean, you could maybe even argue is even more out there in terms of your experience, but of course it's changing quickly and, you know, definitely very, very industrialized. You know, I went to China and I'd been studying Japanese for so long, but I was there in China and I thought, maybe this is the future. People keep talking about China. Maybe this is my opportunity to really go abroad and build a career internationally. And so even just less than 2 weeks probably after I arrived, even though I was only going to be there originally for 3 months, I started studying Chinese in my free time. So it was just like, you know, let's do this. And it's part of also, like, it's different from being in a very foreigner friendly kind of English speaking, relatively well English speaking place, even like here in Portugal, where you can get along fine with English. And I'm not saying you can't do that in China 100%, but I could really tell that it would make a big improvement on my experience. So that's why I thought, let's just dig in and try to figure it out. And I really love the experience to be there. I'd actually visited China for about 2.5 weeks after I did a semester in Singapore, which I didn't talk about at the beginning, but I did one semester abroad. And at the end of the semester, I thought, I want to see China. Like, that was one of my goals. You know, I'd just never been. It was always one of those bucket list places for me. Yeah. And so I went by myself for 2.5 weeks on a, you know, student's budget. And it was really, really challenging. Outside of the big cities, of course, almost every city in China is a big city compared to what we're used to. But outside of Beijing and Shanghai, being able to communicate, and especially this was back in 2009, so things have changed a lot since then. But being able to go back then, quite a few years later, going with coworkers, working at, you know, a foreign company, the local office there, being able to work and do everything and have the money to enjoy the city was just a totally different experience. So I wasn't sure what to expect, given that the first time was so difficult, but the second time was, very different and really fantastic.
And just touching on, so you were working for companies then, what kind of work were you doing? Or?
Yeah, so I was working for a company in San Francisco, web and mobile gaming company, as a product manager. So I worked there since January 2013. And at first I was in a couple of different teams, and then we were moving around within the San Francisco office. And then one day, I think in August or September, there was a meeting where it was pretty much 45 minutes of the group head saying, yeah, so here's the business situation, going through a lot of numbers, charts, graphs, metrics. And then at the end saying, yeah, so I need some people to go to either Vancouver or Beijing. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do one of those two, whichever one you need me at. And it ended up being that they needed more people in Beijing. So I said, yeah, sign me up. And like a month later, we were over there. And yeah, we stayed for 3 months. Yeah. And then even after that, a lot of people came back straight away for Christmas and New Year's. But I just went to Vietnam and Laos. And I just thought, you know, this is my chance. So I just went 100% in and really... it was an awesome experience.
How long did you stay in Vietnam and Laos for?
That was just for, I think, 2.5 weeks in total or something like that. So I came back. That was the thing, though. I came back in January all amped up to go back to China. And actually, while we were there, you know, one of the operations people from San Francisco came to visit the office in Beijing. And we all had a one-on-one with this person saying, how it's going. Did we want to come back? What were we thinking? So I said, yes, please send me back. Send me back for at least another year. I was, you know, practicing my Chinese. I was just loving it. I was like, this is my chance to get abroad. And so I came back in January, all amped to go back sometime a few months later, hopefully. And then 1 month after I got back, a multitude of things happened that were out of my control. And suddenly I was on the street corner without a job and my stuff in a cardboard box. Really happened overnight, you know, it was just like within 30 minutes, you know, I found out and then I was gone, which was very different from the typical situation in Europe. Right.
That was
tough. Yeah.
Was that your first time being let off as such?
Yeah. So that was, that was really difficult because I had seen that future in China in front of me. Even the night before I got the news, it was on a Friday morning, but that Thursday night, I heard from the boss that I had gone to China with, hey, we're planning to go back in April, you know, get prepared. So literally I went from cheersing my friends in my apartment, like, hey man, I'm going to get to go back to China. This is awesome. To the next morning, finding out some really rough news. So yeah, that was the first time and indeed not the last of being laid off. It's a challenging road to work in startups, to work in tech abroad. It's at least in my experience, but, you know, I use that as an opportunity to then ultimately make it to Tokyo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm happy to talk about, but yeah, I know my story is quite complex and, have many twists and turns.
It's funny how things work out. Like one door closes and another opens and eventually you get to where you want. You went to China the first time, so you were like earning an American wage. Did you find that you had loads of money? Stuff was really cheap then. In 2009, was it?
Yeah. So I went the first time in 2009 when I was a student. And then this work trip was the end of 2013.
Okay.
Honestly, we had a great deal to go over there. And this is the part that blew my mind. When they said, you know, we need some people to go to Vancouver, we need some people to go to Beijing, I immediately said, sign me up. I'm going to go to something. I just need to figure out which one. Whereas, of course, some people wanted to stay in San Francisco and they have families and I get all of that. But what blew my mind is that there were people that really said, China, this is a hardship. It's difficult to go to China. It's a hardship. So I need some hazard pay. Basically, like extra pay because of the hardship that I'm going to experience living there. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, mouth just open, like staring at these people, like, this is a hardship for you. I mean, I'm like, strap me in, like, as soon as we can get out of the city. I mean, San Francisco is a great city, but I was also like, this is my dream, you know. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the dream that I had of Japan, but it was the dream of being abroad, which was the underlying thing that had been propelling me forward. So I was so happy to go, and it was just so funny to hear that other people viewed it very differently than me. But to answer your question, there was definitely, we were definitely in a good situation. I mean, they set us up, it was only for 3 months, and the people that ended up going for much longer had a bit of a different situation, but still were, you know, paid very well. But we had a really nice apartment right across the street from the office. We had some increased pay and things like that. So it was a very luxurious experience.
Nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you took some time to travel through Europe for 2 months. Was that kind of like an interrailing or something like that?
Yeah. So basically following being laid off from that job, I just kind of figured, what did I want to do? And I was taking a couple interviews around San Francisco, but in the back of my mind, I really felt like I wanted to go back, you know, abroad. That was my dream. And that had been right in front of me. And I saw it sort of disappear on that street corner. So I thought, okay, how can I make this happen? And I realized that what I needed was some time away from the San Francisco hiring scene. You know, there are other product manager jobs. I'm not saying that they're easy to get, but I just thought, if I'm here, I'm surrounded by, you know, those opportunities, people who are progressing in their career, it just creates that environment where I feel like I need to get busy. And I thought, okay, I'm going to take this chance to do my trip around Europe for 2 months, which is something that I'd had in the back of my mind. So when I actually first started my career, I was in investment banking. So I switched over to this product manager job. And anyway, what not to spend too long on the short, well, 2.5 year finance job. But during that time, I just spent so many days in my cubicle dreaming about traveling around Europe and, well, around the world, but definitely around Europe. And that had just been, you know, I'd been with my family when I was young to just a couple of cities, but there was so much more to see. So I just thought, okay, this is my chance. Now I'm, you know, free to travel. Don't have any obligations with work. And I can use that time to see if I can find my next opportunity. So, yeah, while I was traveling around for 2 months, I was also taking interviews in China and Japan because I thought this is my time away, which I don't know, maybe people listening think this is crazy. Even in some ways, I think it's crazy. But even though I was like there to have a good time and see these cities and, you know, have some parties and things like that, I also thought, really, this is my time away from San Francisco, away from the pressures of being and staying in the valley, the Silicon Valley. So I thought, okay, this is my time to really dig in on seeing if there's something out there for me. And it turned out that at the end of my trip, the very last day, right before I got on the plane back to San Francisco, I had the final interview for the job that I ended up getting in Japan. So it all worked out. And as
All
you
worked
say,
out.
it make, like, I think this is a theme in my experience is it tends to always work out in the end, but you may not see that
At the
during
time.
the, you know, when you're in the middle of it, right? So, but time and time again, I've seen that, you know, putting my energy, my desires out there, seeing what comes back, you know, working toward them has paid off for me. So that's definitely an example of it.
One of the themes of the Bootcast is mental health and trying to deal with mental health. Is there anything that you really struggled with mentally? Like you touched on the first time that you were let off. Would that kind of be a big one for you? Or was there anything else that on this whole journey that was really a battle?
Yeah, I think so I guess to cut to it or to like to really say it directly. So I've been laid off 3 times and I've also quit 3 other jobs in the last 7 years. So basically the whole time I've been doing this product management career. And yeah, so that's almost, you know, average of 1 a year, which is pretty rough. So, you know, that's something that I'm happy to be able to be honest about because it's not something, you know, in a way, it's not something that I'm proud of in a sense. I mean, my original vision for my career was to be able to work along, you know, a couple of years at least at each different company, be able to move up the ranks, just have that nice sort of idea of this professional corporate career. It has not worked out for me that way. And yeah, it's been difficult. I mean, I have this, now that I've been laid off so many times, I can like smell it a mile away. Like I can see it coming, even the last one, which happened in October, I could see it coming. And I just sort of, I was also sort of, you know, not super happy there, but maybe that's also a trend is my relative unhappiness with different corporate, you know, situations. So I was prepared for it. I was ready for whatever was coming. But I think, you know, I've struggled with it, with this idea of like, why does this keep happening to me? Or, you know, how do I keep, because of course I have to keep getting visas and everything else. I mean, you know, I don't have the benefit of being an EU citizen. Although I'm working toward that here now in Portugal, which will take some more years. But yeah, at every turn, it's like, okay, you have 3 months, you have 6 months, you have to figure out what's next. And just trying to find that next job or that next way to sponsor my visa or the next paycheck is been difficult. So I'm proud of what I've done and the journey that I've been on, the road that I've taken. I think it's an unusual one and I'm super happy to be where I am today and I wouldn't be here without it. But on the other hand, I'm also not going to say that it's been easy and there's been a lot of struggles on that side. And I think something else too, which is thankfully changed more in recent months and years, I guess, is that when you move a city, it can also be very isolating, can be very lonely. And now I'm, you know, very happy to be with my wife. And I think that helps a lot in that situation. But when I was single, doing my own thing, just like leaving one country for the next, which pretty much happened, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, I left Japan for Germany. And then it was just like, oh, now I'm completely new culture, language, situation, don't really know anybody here. And so some of those early months were really challenging. But yeah, I think those are kind of two areas where I've certainly struggled.
And from that whole experience of the layoffs and the quitting and the moving about, what's the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself or the biggest benefit that's come from that?
I think the biggest thing has been kind of like I alluded to earlier, this notion that whatever happens, it is for the best. And even if it doesn't seem like that at the time, I mean, certainly, like I said, so many times of just like self-reflection or frustration, just trying to figure out like why does these situations keep happening? Why does it seem like I always and there is a part of me that always takes the hard road. I can't deny that I could have done this in an easier fashion. I didn't have to go and change careers and change companies and quit stuff where they liked me. I just didn't like, that situation much or obviously changing cultures. And so I've definitely just realized that, but no matter what comes, I've just seen so many times that in the end, the right thing happens, even if it's not what you think that you want, it ends up being the right thing. And so just developing some kind of understanding that things will work out. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at this by any stretch of the imagination. I still struggle with it, thinking like, am I doing the right thing? Are things going to work out? This is still a struggle. But I can at least look back on my experience and say it has worked out, so I have no reason to think that it won't continue to work out.
But and to make some of those decisions, like to quit a job, because I quit my job as well and went traveling. Everyone else looking at your situation is telling you this is illogical or that's crazy or that's a good job, you're making good money. Did you have to battle with that much, or like when you made the decision that, right, I'm quitting or I'm going to head to Japan or I'm going to head to China, would you be stubborn enough to follow it through with, regardless of, parents' opinions or friends' advice or?
I think I'm stubborn enough, have been stubborn enough, and whether that's good or bad to proceed forward with my dream and my vision, I guess. But it doesn't mean that I haven't had plenty of times of, is this really what I want? Is this what I should do? And I still have, I mean, honestly, I still have that with this idea of the career. Like I mentioned, I started in investment banking, so I was with a lot of high-powered finance people, let's say, which I've realized in the following many years, I mean, I started that job a decade ago, that I was not a fit for that group of people and that type of job. Of course, I didn't really realize that or really know that at the time. And there's some stuff that only comes to you with further reflection. But I look back at that time and those people, and some of them are still in the industry. And I'm not saying that I want to still be working in finance. It's just like, it is that thing that comes to the high-powered salary that comes with that type of work, right? And to recognize that in my career, despite doing well relative to local salaries and everywhere that I've lived and worked, I've decreased my salary for the most part since the beginning. And that, that's to search for those interesting opportunities abroad, the ways to, challenge myself, to broaden my horizons, to get more travel experiences. I
Which are
definitely
priceless.
Which are priceless. I mean, and that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. But there are times where I still, think, did I make the right choice there? And I mean, the answer is yes, but I still question myself, it's easy to look at LinkedIn, to look at Instagram, to look at all of these places. And I mean, on the one hand, maybe I'm sure they're, not to try to be boastful, but to look at both sides, there are probably people looking at my situation thinking, wow, that's pretty cool, But on the other hand, I still look at other people and see the other side of that, or like think about what things could have been like if I had stayed in finance, which I would have been miserable, but I would have I don't know, more money to show for it. But then you get to the question of what's the purpose, or what are your values? What's the priority? So
100%. Books. What's your favorite book?
I do read quite a bit, but I don't reread too many times. My favorite book for a long time was Ender's Game. Good sci-fi book there. But actually what I've been reading in the last years has been a lot more business and psychology books and Malcolm Gladwell and all that good stuff.
Yeah,
but one that really caught my attention recently was The Miracle Equation by Hal Elrod. And first I read his book, The Morning Miracle, I think it's called. And then I saw this one, The Miracle Equation, and I really liked the idea of it, which was this notion of all it takes is extraordinary effort and unwavering faith to accomplish any, let's say, a miracle in your daily life, not sort of spiritual miracle, but like an amazing accomplishment or something. And
yeah.
I think I saw the cover of the book, and I had just read the other one, which I thought was pretty good. And I thought, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. And it really surprised me. It really amazed me, because he did a fantastic job, I think, of putting into words on the page what I've experienced in my life, this notion, this whole thing of when I have a goal, when I have something that I set for myself. I mean, I definitely don't have unwavering faith. It wavers, but I have something toward that. Like I have, and it's developed more as I've seen it happen, as I talked about, you know, again and again in my life with the next country or the next city to move to, the next job, the next opportunity, and just to be open to those things happening, to be on the lookout for those opportunities as you have faith and you move forward and you make consistent effort toward achieving that goal. And it's a simple equation, but I think he does a really great job of laying it out, going into the details, talking about some of the pitfalls, the challenges. And I feel like a lot of these self-help-ish kind of books, if you want to call them that, a lot of them are just all roses, basically. It just says the good things. It's a lot of platitudes. It's like, but I felt like this book, he did a good job of also acknowledging that it is difficult to maintain this unwavering faith. It is difficult to do this extraordinary effort. But I like the idea also that extraordinary effort can just be a small amount of effort done over a long period of time. And all of these ideas are really resonated with me. And actually, right as I finished it, I thought of a friend, a really good friend of mine that I thought would appreciate that book. And it was his birthday, or it had just been. So I was like, man, let me buy you a copy of this book. And I mean, I don't really do that. So I think it's a good, it's yet another kind of good indication that this was something that stuck out to me.
Yeah. Nice. So that's the Miracle Equation by Hal Elrod.
Mm-hmm.
Two people who inspire you.
maybe these are just kind of standard. I'm not sure everyone who's been on your podcast so far. And once again, maybe these are kind of standard responses, but for me, one in particular is Elon Musk. And I think the reason for that is that, at least for what I understand of him, and I don't follow every up and down and every tweet and all that stuff, but just in the big picture, I feel like he dreams really, really big. Like he just, and just to go from extremely successful exits and companies and investments, taking all of that money and putting it behind stuff that other people would never even imagine, or they might imagine, but think somebody else is going to do it, or it's in 100 years, but just the way that he sees the world, the way that he sees the purpose of and value of money. For me, I think one of my struggles is just wanting, for example, to live in a new country or to have a new job or this or that. Sometimes I feel like my dreams are too small, and maybe it's just a feeling of wanting to do something that I view as achievable or accomplishable. And it's not bad, but like the level of dream that somebody like Elon Musk has just kind of blows my mind. Like it's so far out there. And yet you get to the point where you almost can't doubt the guy anymore. Like if he says it's going to happen, then it just seems to happen. he like wills it into being. And yeah, I think this stuff just kind of just blows my mind. So he's one for me. And I guess, you know, another would maybe be somebody like Richard Branson, but kind of for the same reasons. I mean, you could pick other people in that vein, but just guys that just seem to understand the way the world works in a different way than pretty much everybody else.
Nice. As good as any. What's your favorite country that you've been to then? I'm just looking at your scratch map behind you. You have been to Ireland, I can see, is it?
I have. Yeah, I loved it. It was a long weekend trip to Dublin, so I really enjoyed it, but I need to see a lot more. But in terms of favorite country that I've been to, I mean, every trip, you know, the value that you get out of it or the experience really does depend as well on maybe your mindset, who you're with, the particulars of the situation. So those always come into play. But I really loved, for example, Vietnam. I just had an amazing time traveling around there. Amazing food, really nice people, just cool big cities. That was on my... There was that time of my life where I was really all about, like, I need to see every big city in the world, like something about the big city and getting lost in the city. Yeah. And I still have that a bit, but now I live a very different life in a small beach town here. So I've kind of moved away from that in terms of the lifestyle, but there's still something attractive about the big city. So that's one that I loved.
Ho Chi Minh.
Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi, and I also went to another city called Hue. But I want to see more like Da Nang and some. I mean, I'd love to go back. And my wife and I are thinking about all the places we want to go around Southeast Asia when all this kind of clears up.
I was in Ho Chi Minh for 3 months. Amazing. Just a really, really cool city. And like you said, the food, the people, the culture. Like, it's phenomenal the amount of people in the city. I couldn't believe it. Like, and even driving over there, like I hired out a scooter, like a moped to, you kind of need one to get around because the roads, like to cross a road by foot, it's just, it's not really safe.
No. There were so many of those experiences, right? Where you just, like you're, it's another place where you're probably out of your typical element, but on the other hand, it's also feels welcoming and, you know, there was just so much life there, I guess you can say. There's so much life.
Nice. Not to be political or anything, but the inauguration was last week. What's your comments on Trump and Biden?
To be totally honest, I try to stay out of the politics too much. I actually like try to shut out that whole news cycle. but definitely these big events I'm aware of. And to comment on it, I definitely very pleased. I'm definitely very pleased. It hasn't been the easiest 4 years to be an American abroad, I can say. It's funny because, if you travel around the Bush time, there was a similar feeling. When you were abroad during the Obama time, like things were pretty good. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. So I think what's really interesting about being American abroad is recognizing at the end of the day how much American politics and media and everything has this massive effect on the rest of the world.
Oh, massive. And I was just talking about this last night, and I think this year in particular, and I don't know if it's linked to COVID that everybody is at home watching the news or listening to the news because they're not out and about, but it's like American news and American politics is now the world's concern. It's global news.
Right.
And it's just really interesting to see and to hear from an American's perspective, the same thing.
It just hits me like I probably will never forget this experience I had when I was in Berlin. So I had just moved there, in 2016 in August. And so, you know, it was just a few months in. Yeah. So I was when they had the 2016 election. And I just remember going to a shisha place there, sitting with some friends. the guy comes around and I don't know if we took our drink order or whatever. It was at the end of the night. And, you know, he's just asking, I think he was from Turkey or somewhere, but he's just asking kind of where we were all from. And so we went around and just said where we were from. And, you know, I say, yeah, I'm originally American, but I moved here from Tokyo, blah, 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 because I try to sort of distance the, I do that a lot because I'm not, well, I do that a lot also just because, I mean, I haven't lived in the US sort of permanently since 2014. So it's been a while. But yeah. But then he just is like, oh, Trump, you know, and I was just, that was difficult, man. I was just like, the guy who's taking our order or like, you know, helping us at this restaurant is also like razzing me about the situation. And that was difficult, man. I just felt like I couldn't get away from, I mean, it was also the very beginning. Yeah. So it was like a new story, whereas it's certainly gotten older in the last 4 years, but it was difficult.
Yeah, that's mad. Okay, so David, just before we go, Expat Empire, can we get the one-liner, the elevator pitch?
Sure. So the one-liner is get inspired to move abroad and we'll show you how to do it. Nice. So pretty much what we do is we provide a lot of different content for free. So we have Expat Empire podcast as well, so you can check that out. We have blog posts. I also wrote a book about my time in Japan called The Passport to Working in Japan. So to basically sum up my experience and really trying to get there for more than 15 years and then tell people kind of how they can do it and show them how they can do it as well based on those experiences. So whether you want to live, work, or just otherwise, experience Japan. So that's another thing that we have on there. As far as the consulting services are concerned, so really helping people to think through their plans. So we usually start with a free 30-minute consulting call to talk through their plans, what they're thinking about, and seeing what services that we offer could help, you know, help them make the next step. So that can be things like just a full overview of all the things you need to be aware of, best practices for moving abroad. So we have a 60-minute call for that. We also can help people figure out what country would be a good fit for them, or if they're trying to decide between a few countries or want some recommendations. Yeah. We can do that through our destination country comparison service, thinking through any visa planning issues as far as what visas would make sense, depending on where you're coming from, where you're going to.
Yeah.
The timeline planning service is a full checklist of all the things you need to do before, during, and after you move to settle into a new destination. And then international job search for people who want to work abroad and find a job at a company. And also a new service that we're just developing now called Start Working Online, which is to help people to make these online businesses to whether they want to be a digital nomad or live in a place long term, like here in Portugal. There are visas that allow you to do that. So kind of thinking through what their skills are and figuring out those next steps for them to build a business online that they can then take those revenue income streams to wherever they want to work from.
Nice. And it's such a good time to be, you know, really developing this with COVID, because I think it's opened up the whole world of remote working to many people who really didn't really get it before or didn't realize that a lot of the jobs now can actually be done from wherever there's a good internet connection, which is phenomenal, really, when you think about
it. Yeah, I think it's been an amazing transformation. I remember the last company I was working for, I started in November of 2019. And then obviously as March came around, we at least originally thought it would be is sort of 2 weeks at home and it became many, many months, tentative 2 weeks. I don't think anybody actually thought it would only be 2 weeks, but, right before that, in the last day of work in the office, before we started this, working from home, my coworker was all concerned about how she's going to be able to manage and how does it work. And she likes to be in the office. Mm. And now it's so funny to talk to her because months later, and she's also changed companies. Now she's working for a remote first company and she's just like, I'm never, ever going back to the office ever again. And so just, it's amazing, right? To see people changing their opinion on it. And for me, it was actually tough to start at that job because there was a real expectation that you're in the office every day. Whereas the previous job I had in Berlin before that, it was initially much more office heavy, but then it became working from the office like once every couple of weeks. You know, it was pretty much all from home, or I was doing a week in this country or that country. So to go back into that office environment was a challenge. And I can say now I feel like my coworker, which is I never, I'm okay a couple times if I have to, if I'm working for somebody else again in the future, if I have to, I'll make it work. But
yeah,
I would really love a more flexible office environment.
Yeah. So. I think it's definitely the way forward. It's naturally going that way, and COVID, I think it's accelerating it. Definitely in Ireland anyway, like the government here is adopting new plans and kind of subsidizing and grants and stuff for co-working hubs and to subsidize people to work remotely. So it's slowly but surely it's becoming the norm, you know.
Yeah, and I think it'll just continue from here. I'm still not totally sure about all the companies getting all the press for being like these big tech companies saying we're fully permanently remote. I feel like it was kind of the news cycle at the time. So we'll see how that actually pans out. But
yeah,
I think it's just, you know, people are recognizing, well, number one, it's very important to live in a place that you want, like in an apartment or in a house that you really appreciate, because you might end up being there a lot more than you expected. So I think being in a good spot, being like somewhere that you appreciate, not always thinking, especially being abroad, like, oh, I'm going to travel here this weekend, I'm going to travel there next weekend. And, you know, so where you are, dealing with visa stuff and all of that, and just making those plans for how you can make money on your own outside of needing an employer that might cut you one day sooner rather than later. You just never know what's around the corner, at least based on my experience. I've certainly been through the ringer a few times. So I think all of that will just contribute to more interest in being remote friendly, whether that's work from home, work from other countries, living abroad, doing your own business. So we definitely at Expat Empire want to be there for people trying to think through those transitions.
Brilliant. And just out of curiosity, do you work from home yourself or from a hub or like a WeWork place?
So we have a 2-bedroom apartment here. So kind of the second bedroom, unless guests are here, which hasn't been for a while. Pretty much is my makeshift office. Cool. And like I mentioned, I've worked from other places before for previous jobs. And so definitely looking forward to the opportunity to do that even more so with this job once things clear up. Our kind of long-term goal is with my wife is to kind of do, let's say, roughly half the year here in Portugal, half the year kind of in other places, hopefully around Asia. So
cool.
Get a little visit to her family, a reason to get back to Japan, but also to see more of Asia. But, you know, there's so much of the world to see.
Yeah.
And I think striking that balance between traveling and working and just kind of making it all happen in a way that's efficient and effective is a challenge, but I'm excited to, you know, figure out the best way that works for us and just optimize and just live kind of that life that we're dreaming about.
Brilliant. And just before we go, it's just interesting that you mentioned that, because like the whole idea of a digital nomad was this guy on a laptop sitting under a palm tree, drinking a cocktail, working away online. Like the reality is that that's only for a small percentage of people. And at the end of the day, like some productive work actually has to be done at some stage. You know?
If people can legitimately succeed and make it work that way, then more power to them. But I agree with you that I think the reality is not quite as rosy as that picture. And you still have to deal with the challenges of travel. But I think one thing that's interesting is I'm not really so sure that I would want to do the fully traveling all the time and not have a home base. Like I said, in my my sort of ideal situation would be half the year here in Portugal. I think just to have those key relationships and friends that you develop here, to have your bed, to have like your place, your stuff, your closet.
Yeah, yeah.
I realized it a bit when I traveled through Europe for those 2 months after that job in San Francisco was I was having a blast. And I mean, there are things looking back I could have done better. And obviously I was also taking these interviews in cafes and Starbucks at 8 a.m. or midnight, you know, like depending on when the interviews were across the world. But during some time I was like deeply lonely. And I think part of it was at first I was like at the hostels, let's go out for drinks, let's do this, do the hostel thing. And then you get into it and you're like, man, I just like got to know this guy. He's leaving tomorrow. You do the same 10, 20 questions with everybody. And I just sort of shut, like closed myself off a bit after some weeks on that trip. And I think that was really tough. So I was happy to get back to San Francisco and see friends then. And it'll be different now with my wife and different life stage and different situation. But I think that just made me realize at an early stage, even before jumping on that full digital nomad bandwagon, that there are challenges there, and depends on how you like to live your life and the connections and like what's important to you.
Super. Okay, David, it's been a pleasure having you on the Bootcast. Just before we wrap it up then, how can people reach out to you or get in touch or contact you for any of your expat empire services?
Absolutely. So I'd love it if anyone's interested to visit expatempire.com. They can download the top 10 tips for moving abroad ebook that I put together based on my last long years of experiences moving from country to country. And definitely reach out with to schedule a free 30-minute consulting call if you just want to talk through your ideas, figure out your next plans, see how we can help. And I'd just love to hear from folks. They're happy to feel free to email us through the website or on Facebook, Instagram, at Expat Empire as well.
Nice. Okay, David, thanks a million once again, and mind yourself. Hopefully, we'll meet someday.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
No worries. Bye. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. So I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Bootcast, folks, with David McNeil. Make sure to check out his website, expatempire.com, and drop him an email if you're interested or have any concerns about moving abroad or working abroad in a foreign country. David is an expert on the subject, and he'll be able to help you out with his website, expatempire.com. As always, folks, I'd really appreciate any likes, comments, or shares that you can leave, any ratings or reviews either, wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or any of the other podcast places. Thanks a million for listening, watching, and supporting up to now. And remember to keep an eye on the store, where we'll be launching our range of clothing and accessories very, very soon, folks. Become the journey.